Welcome back to Midpoint, friends, on this March 18th, the day after St. Paddy's Day. I hope you are all recovered from imbibing and celebrating yesterday, because everyone is Irish on St. Patrick's Day, right? I'm your host, Shelley Reback, and I'm excited about today's show. It's something really different for us here at Midpoint, where we are usually venting about the fecklessness of our Florida politicians and ranting about the fascistic and authoritarian tendencies that they insist on foisting on us with regularity every legislative session. But not today. Today we are going to be talking about romance and women's pleasure and the joys of indulging in fantasy. In a few minutes, after our news nuggets of the week, we will welcome my guest, Mel Saavedra, the founder of Tampa's only romance bookstore, Steamy Lit, and the creator of the Steamy Lit Collective. But first, as it is the end of the legislative session, it's still important to know what just happened and what didn't. So before we get to talking about pleasure, let's focus on the pain Tallahassee inflicted on us this session. You've heard me ranting about the proposed domestic terrorist law for weeks now. Well, they done did it. They passed a law that makes it possible for the Florida Department of Law Enforcement to declare an organization, any organization, a domestic terrorist organization. And they made it so that this designation can be made in secret. No chance to challenge the designation, no due process, just boom, you're a domestic terrorist. Yep, one day you're exercising your First Amendment constitutional rights by peacefully demonstrating in a public forum with, I don't know, Students for a Democratic Society or the Council on American Islamic Relations or maybe the ACLU or even WMNF. And the next thing you know, you have lost all of your state benefits. You've been expelled from the state university. You've been kicked off campus, because that's part of the law too. And now your name is on a list of domestic terrorists. What happens from there? We don't know yet. But it wouldn't surprise me if the federal government then picks up your name, cancels your global entry, maybe voids your passport so you can't travel outside the country, puts monitoring on your telephone, because they can do that in secret too now, maybe even puts a restriction on your bank account if they can show you've ever made a donation to support the organization that they've targeted, because now you're supporting terrorism. And they could even prosecute you for that. I can't express just how bad this law is, how unconstitutional, how damaging to democracy, how completely antithetical it is to everything that America is supposed to stand for. I'm sure it will be challenged in the courts on constitutional grounds. Just recently, when DeSantis tried to designate CARE as a domestic terrorist organization by his executive order, CARE fought back in the courts and a federal judge issued a temporary injunction blocking DeSantis' executive order, finding that it violated CARE's First Amendment right to free speech because it discriminated based on viewpoint. It was issued in retaliation for protected speech. And it coerced third parties to disassociate from CARE. So there's hope that this law will be viewed the same way. But we don't know. All we know is there is an election for the lawmakers who passed this abomination in November. Let's remember this at election time. Now, before the end of session, they also passed a law that allows the governor to more easily remove duly elected officials if they promote or take any official action related to diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives. This bill says that if local officials violate the ban on DEI, they are committing malfeasance or misfeasance in office, and they can be removed from office. It also allows a resident to sue the local official for violating this law and recoup attorney's fees if successful. So where does that leave our pride celebrations? Hell, where does that leave the St. Patrick's Day parade? The consequences from this idiocy remain to be seen. But since this is supposed to be a show with positive vibes, I'm going to segue into telling you about a couple terrible things that actually failed in the legislature this session. Whether they rear their ugly heads again in the special session that DeSantis has called or next year remains to be seen. But right now, we are safe from DeSantis's plan to remove all vaccine mandates from state law. The lawmakers had a milder idea to restrict vaccines by expanding the vaccine exemptions and making it easier to opt children out of required school entry vaccines based just on their personal consciences. That failed, and common sense prevailed. So vaccines remain required for public school kids, subject to a limited set of exemptions. Also, a bill to compel physicians to see unvaccinated children in their medical practices also failed, so pediatricians can still refuse to take on patients that are unvaccinated. But still on the horizon is what will happen to property taxes. As of today, the Florida legislature's regular session ended in a gridlock without passing a particular plan to eliminate property taxes. While the Florida House approved a major proposal to eliminate non-school property taxes for homesteaded properties, the Senate did not advance a companion bill. So Governor Ron DeSantis has suggested we need a special session, and it will be called as early as April to resolve this issue. So we'll be watching that, and we will keep you informed. All right. Now, changing the vibe completely, it is International Women's Month, and we are here to talk about romance. Why? Because romance is hot right now. It's dominating our cultural media, and it is dominated by women as creators and as consumers. From Bridgerton to heated rivalry in historical and in sports settings, to romanticy with vampires, fairies, and fays, to underrepresented communities seeing themselves in Kiki Banjo and Shane, romance is now the highest grossing and most popular fiction genre in the world right now. So we are going to talk about why with my guest, Mel Saavedra, founder of the Steamy Lit Collective and owner of the Steamy Lit Romance Bookstore in South Tampa. So welcome to Midpoint, Mel.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Now, first off, tell us, what is the Steamy Lit Collective?
So the Steamy Lit Collective is a bunch of things. Our main thing is a romance bookstore. We have a store in Miami, Tampa, and Fort Lauderdale, and we were the first brick-and-mortar romance bookstore in South Florida and Florida in general. But our focus has always been, our mission has always been diversity, celebrating diversity in romance, and amplifying the work of authors who write the romance genre who are part of marginalized identities or communities. And so through that, we do book subscription boxes. We do our nonprofit side, which is right now kind of at a halt because we used to do a book convention in California every year. But we also do romance craft writing focused on marginalized authors and making sure that they have something that is accessible to them to be able to work on their craft. And we have the bookstores, we have community events, we have walking clubs, we have all kinds of things. But our whole focus is the romance genre and celebrating diversity in it. And hopefully one day we will be our own publisher.
Wow. Okay. Well, that is certainly, you cover the gamut, don't you?
Yeah.
And so I love this emphasis on diversity and inclusion. Obviously in anything, but in particular in the ability of people to craft stories that allow others in those communities to see themselves represented, because, obviously we need more of that. You know, I think that certainly we are seeing more of that in the way that romance is being portrayed, at least in the television area. So, for example, we have Bridgerton, which is a Shonda Rhimes production, which has, you know, crossed racial communities in its casting. And we have Heated Rivalry, which is just a verified phenomenon right now about a gay romance. And so it's interesting to me that we are in a time and place where the pressure is on to get rid of diversity and inclusion, at least in Florida and Texas, for example. And yet we are seeing more and more of that in the culture. right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it speaks for what the community wants, right? And I think to go back to your Bridgerton point, the Bridgerton novels were not very diverse at all. And so seeing them come to life in a very diverse manner has been a breath of fresh air to bring that diversity to historical romance.
Yeah. And this is so interesting that in a state like Florida, where DEI is under attack so viscerally, that we are still seeing the popularity of romance. I mean, you've just opened three brick and mortar romance bookstores really totally devoted to the romance genre, right? And we also know that our local libraries, for example, are hosting romance conferences. There was one at the Largo Public Library, had a romantic book festival.
That's coming up.
It's coming. Well, there's one scheduled for May, right?
Mm-hmm. May. And then we partnered with them last year for another one too. So I think they're trying to do something yearly now.
Okay, great. Well, let's remember at the end of the show to talk about that, in case people are interested in participating, because that's local. People may want to participate in their local library's steamy lit festival. All right. Tell me, how did you come to the romance genre? What attracted you to it?
Yeah, so I was actually, I guess, let me pivot back. I've always been a really big reader, but I always wanted to read books that had any kind of romance, like whether they were going to hold hands at the end or they were like, there might be a kiss happening. Like that, all I wanted was romance in my books. And I didn't realize so much later age that like the whole there was a whole genre for what I wanted. I really came to it, I would say, when I was in the Navy and I was out to sea, and I just downloaded a bunch of books on my little e-reader. And it was just a way for me to like get away from my day to day when I was out to sea. It was a happily ever after. I'm a sucker for romance. I'm a sucker for love. Mm-hmm. And it was just beautiful to read about. And I think really when Steamy Lit got started, that was during the pandemic, and I had started a bookstagram, which is your Instagram equivalent to BookTok,
okay.
Right? So a book page just focused on books. And first of all, I thought I was doing something like new. I didn't realize
innovative.
And I didn't realize there was already like a whole community there. But that's the first time where I felt like I had really found my people, like a bunch of people who love to read. And in that, I started getting lost in romance. And when I was reading and picking up more and more romance, I realized that a lot of the romance that was being marketed, that when I walked into Barnes & Noble was on the tables, et cetera, was primarily written by white women. And it seemed to me that a lot of the publishing dollars were going to these books when there were a plethora of books written by black and brown people, but they were just not publicized or marketed as much. And so this is when I came up with the idea of the Steam Box, which was my first subscription box. And it was a way for me to amplify those authors, pairing them with sexual wellness items, because I also wanted to talk about why we don't talk about the pleasure of women, why when we talk about anything that has to do with a woman's orgasm, we are all of a sudden clutching our pearls, but we have the Epstein files, right?
Right.
Please give me a break. Like, why is it that when a woman is empowered by their sexuality and what they like in sex, they're all of a sudden called all of these things, but a man isn't, right? And so I just really wanted to provide something through a subscription box to just have these conversations.
So what would be in the subscription box?
You would have any kind of like vibrators or sex toys, sexual wellness items. You would have some kind of self-care.
Like lubricating.
Yep.
Whether that was stuff. Maybe a candle.
Yeah,
whatever.
Candle, mask. I wanted to create like a whole experience for you. Those
okay.
are still available if you all want them, but they're quarterly box. I would pick three different romance books. And then I just wanted you to have a little like take care of me and who I am, whether that's through reading and ingesting, right, romance books, or whether that's like physical through a massage candle or a sex toy or whatever that was.
Okay. All right. Well, it is International Women's Month, so it's great to be able to talk about these things. What do you think women get from the romance genre, you know, that it makes it so popular? I mean, demographically, 78% of romance readers are female. I mean, it's overwhelmingly women that want romance. And I mean, I think it's a perennial question. I'm sure scholars and scientists have tried to answer it. But, you know, what do you think that women get from the romance genre generally? What, you know?
I think there's a lot of safety in the romance genre. And I think, you know, a lot of people talk about the formula of romance, right? And when you take any kind of romance courses or anyone schools you on the internet about what defines a romance book, you will always find that a happily ever after is a must, right? And I think that there's safety in that. There's safety in being able to go through all of these things with two characters that you may relate to. You may know someone that relates to it. You may have heard about it, you know, whatever that is.
You may have gone through it yourself,
correct,
right?
And then finding that they still find the happily ever after. Or in many instances, there's like these amazing friendships that you find in these romance books. There's found family. There's like empowerment in a sense that I think you digest in a way that you can't digest through other media, in my opinion. I remember when I got divorced many years ago, I picked up a book that was like Right Time, Right Place. And it was about a woman who was overcoming her divorce and finding love after divorce. And there's something about being able to relate to a situation and seeing that, oh my God, these people went through things that are similar to mine and are deserving of love, have still found happiness, have made errors, but they're still in love, right? They're still finding this love. And I think that there's a safety in that really just women are interested in, I think people in general.
Yeah, it's overwhelmingly positive. I think that's fundamental about the romance genre.
Sure.
It's overwhelmingly positive. It's interesting that you mentioned that you came to it after a divorce because, you know, in getting ready for today's show, I did some research and apparently most romance readers are either married or have never been married. Fewer are divorced or separated. Apparently, 50% of romance readers are married and 37% of romance readers are single. 8% are widowed. Only 4% are divorced and 1% are separated. I mean, these are statistics from earlier in the decade, but it's interesting that
the 4%.
Well, first of all, that so many women reading romance are married.
Mm.
That I find really interesting.
Yeah.
Because, like you said, there's safety in the books. And maybe they don't feel so safe in their marriages.
I think it's more when you're reading a romance, right? You start getting all those like butterflies and like feelings from when you first start a relationship. And I think you really get that when you are reading a romance book. You know, like when you first met your partner, those like feelings that euphoria you got, I feel like you can really get out of a romance book. And maybe that is why so many married people or people who are in relationships turn to,
because they're not getting that anymore relationship.
Once you are in a long-term relationship, you know, like you start getting into the mundane day-to-day, what are we eating for dinner, doing the dishes, who's doing the laundry, right? Like you're building a life with that person, mm-hmm. and there's plenty of beauty in that. But I think maybe a lot of people are just getting that like euphoria from like, look at these people falling in love and how fun is that?
Right. All right. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa and we are talking about romance and the romance genre with my guest, Mel Saavedra from the Steamy Lit Collective and the Steamy Lit Bookstore. And if you have things to say about romance or women's pleasure and what you get out of the romance genre, give us a call. We'd like to hear from you at 813-239-9663. Or you can send us an email at dj@wmnf.org or a text at 813-433-0885. All right. So what do romance authors get right and what do they get wrong? And why do you think that certain romances fly off the shelves and others just languish?
Yeah, I don't know that I can speak too much about getting wrong, except my personal likes and dislikes, right? But I think that there's something about like a book that has a lot of yearning. There's something about a book that like drips with tension. There's something about forbiddenness that I think like really appeals to people. I think the popularity of dark romance in the past couple of years.
What is dark romance?
Dark romance is, how do I describe this? I mean, you're talking about books where you maybe have like a stalker or like serial killers are falling in love, which like I think really...
Where there's like a threat of violence or...
Yeah, in a sense, right? But the heroine is always safe, right? So like he might kill the whole world for her, but she will always be safe.
Okay.
So you're talking about a lot of these like morally gray characters that there has been like a rise in popularity in the past couple of years. And I don't know if that speaks to our current climate and where we're at, right? I think that at the election, whenever that was, and we woke up the next morning, there was a lot of like conversations on book talk about like, well, I like dark romance. That's why I voted for Trump. And it's like, no, babe. Like, no, that's not actually... he's trying to burn your book. So like what, like anyway, right? Like, and so I think that maybe sometimes what we get wrong in romance in general might be not realizing the power you have with the books that you're writing, right? And making sure that the books that you are writing are written with care, that are written with research. There's a lot of people who write from outside of their identities. And I think that being able to do the proper research for that, whether that's a domestic violence case or anything like that, right? Like there needs to be proper research done because you don't know who's going to pick up that book. And maybe I can discern between like, I like stalkers in my book, but not in real life. But will a 16-year-old be able to discern that, right? And so I think that there is responsibility within authors and publishers when we are putting out books like this to make sure that we are handling them with the respect and knowledge that need to be had for writing these books.
You know, it's interesting that you talk about those issues because I have an email here from somebody who didn't sign their name that's critical of the show because I'm assuming it's a he. Mm-hmm. I could be wrong, but I'm going to assume from the context that this is a he who says, in a state that's mandated gestation slavery for females and a time when our democracy is threatened by domestic traitors and foreign enemies, discussing romance novels is shallow, feckless, and a waste of the bandwidth I contribute to WMNF for. Get serious. I wish you had called in so we could have a discussion about this as opposed to send an email,
right,
sir, because I'm assuming from the context that you are a man, because I don't think it's a waste of bandwidth to talk about a cultural phenomenon that is so popular that it influences our society. I think it's important to ask, why is it that, you know, we have such a popular genre in a state that is trying to restrict rights for women,
right,
that is trying to attack concepts like DEI? I mean, I don't understand that position, but thank you for writing in. I appreciate that you're listening and that you took the time to write in. What's your response to that, Mel?
I will definitely agree that I hope that it is a man.
yeah.
But, you know, I think romance, I think love, I think what the romance genre is doing in itself is an act of resistance. It's an act of resistance to what is going on to women's rights and trans rights and all the different rights that are being attacked right now. So I would totally disagree. I think that there's no better time. And maybe we should have been talking about this 10 years ago because then maybe we wouldn't be where we're at right now. But
that's true.
Good day, sir.
That's right. Good day, sir. As we say in romance, right? Good day, sir. All right. Let's talk about some of these subgenres that are in romance. You've got the historical romance, kind of like Bridgerton as a Regency setting, English Regency setting, paranormal romance, like Romantasy is extremely popular right now, which is, you know, the vampires and werewolves of Twilight and you know, the fairies and fays and fairies. of the, what is it, A Court of Thorn and Roses, mm-hmm. that's so popular. And we've got contemporary romances, which I think are more and more popular, right? So what's consistent about them that fits them all into the romance genre?
Happily Ever After.
Happily Ever After.
So you have a central love story or like romance between two, three people, whatever that is, right? And that you have a Happily Ever After, I think, are some of the main components for it to be classified a romance novel. And within the subgenres, there's so many. And I mean, you can get into like subtropes if you want to, right? Like sports romance, for example. But like at our stores, we're broken up into like otherworldly, which will do like the paranormal, we'll do any magic realism, we'll do romantasy. Then we have our dark romance, morally gray, which is the novels I spoke about earlier. And then we kind of just have it broken up into contemporary. And within contemporary, and I mean, all of these other ones, right? Like you can find so many other sub, you know, you have your, there's obviously historical as well, but you can find your like sports romance, you can find your second chance romance, you can find
and in your stores you have the LGBTQ community represented too.
Yes, absolutely. So I've battled with this for a few different reasons, right? Like we want to always display a queer section, but then do we feel like we are singling out folks? So the best way I have found to do it is to have a section where you find all kinds of queer romances, but also making sure that they're included within the regular shelf. So if you don't want to necessarily go to the queer section, that's not where you're at yet, but you just want to browse our shelves, you'll find them in both.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. All right. I've got a call here from Shelby in Tampa. I'm going to bring on the air. Shelby, you're on the air.
Hey there, good morning, y'all. I'm just calling to say, you know, I've never got into, like, as I like to jokingly call, like, your little smut books. But I actually, a few years back, there was a post in the Temple Terrace area for, you know, they were sending their mother to a home, and they were getting rid of all of her stuff, right? At the time, there was a giant box out. Like, I wish I could exactly knew the dimensions of it. It was huge. And it was full to the brim of those tiny little telenovela, the books that you're referring to today. And it was just such a fun thought for me. Because, like, I imagine for a lot of people, it's the escape reality like we've talked about today. And, you know, I took just a couple of them home. And I've never picked them up. But they're so small. And I know it's just full of, like, wonder and excitement and just, like, I think more than, like, what a lot of people are getting in their romantic partnerships today. Like, yeah. I see a lot of people, I'm within the, like, kind of like the kinkier, non-monogamous community, mm-hmm. Of the dating apps, right? And I see a lot of couples trying to explore something different. And I think that we're just kind of all lost in our romanticness, right? Like, you know, is there anything wrong with finding a third or being non-monogamous? Absolutely not.
Right. Well, maybe people, maybe people start to explore those kinds of desires or thoughts in books first before they move it into their real lives.
I think that's the safety in romance, right? Where you can explore these things in the containment of your book and decide whether that's for you or whether that's something you want to explore. I do have a book recommendation for you if you are in the non-monogamous community, The Oath by T.M. Richardson. I think you would really enjoy that. I don't doubt that the books that you picked up many years ago are good, but a lot of romance has not, especially if it was written so many years ago, may not have aged well. So,
This one was probably 90 that they were sending to a home.
Yeah, so I was going to say, like, I challenge you to pick those up, but actually, I think The Oath by T.M. Richardson would be great.
All right. Thank you for calling in, Shelby. Appreciate you listening to WMNF. All right. So, that's an interesting, that brings up an interesting point. You know, spicy romance. Mm-hmm. What is spicy romance and how does that differ from erotica? And how far does it go before we get into porn?
Yeah, so I would say erotica, you are looking at a book that is primarily sex and little to no plot, right? Like the sex is what's driving the story forward, where when you're reading a romance with spicy scenes, you're still having a story that is moving forward with the plot, not just the sex.
Okay. All right. So I have another email here. This is from from Dee, who wants to know, is sports romance a new trend or has it always been popular? It seems to be everywhere. Sports romance books are trending more than traditional sports books. And she can confirm that as a sports journalist.
I would say that sports romance has always been around. I mean, you have like Susan Elizabeth Phillips, who was writing in the early 90s, right, about a college NFL football team. And I think she has like 18 novels now in it, right?
What's her name?
Susan Elizabeth Phillips.
Okay.
And I would say she's one of like the pioneers of romance, right? And so I think it's been around for a really long time. I think it's just now with things like Heated Rivalry and Book Talk and different things like that, I think that they're gaining more and more popularity, so more and more people are writing it. But I think it's always been around. It just hasn't had the like shine it has on it now.
Well, and also more women are involved in sports, and sports for women, by women.
Yeah, I mean, you have a lot of...
is more popular now.
Yeah, you also have a lot of queer romances within sports, which I think is phenomenal. My prior life, I was in sport management, so I worked in athletics. And so, yeah, I mean, you're seeing the growth of women in sports. And I think that there's just something really powerful about being a woman in a men-dominated field. And so being able to see these romance books from a different perspective in the sports realm, right, it's also fantastic.
Yeah, and maybe showing a woman in that kind of, with that kind of power.
Correct.
Is alluring to some people. All right, and... I want to go back to the romanticy thing because I find that really confusing and really hard to understand the attraction of that. But it is so popular. Mm-hmm. I'm not in any way suggesting that there's anything wrong with it. It's not to my particular taste.
Yeah.
But neither is magical realism in general fiction,
right.
You know? But people love it. What is it about romanticy and all the fantasy and the fantastical characters and world building that's done in that genre? What is going on there?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just the escaping reality, right? I think to a different degree in that now you are part of these worlds that are not real, and you're part of these stories that are all made up, right? Which I guess all of fiction in a sense is, right? But like, you're not talking about contemporary times most of the time. You are like losing yourself and people having magic, or like shadow daddies are very popular, right?
A shadow daddy?
Which is someone who has like shadow magic. So now you have like a shadow hand that's also touching you, right? So like,
okay.
There's like so many different parts of romanticy that I think make it so popular. But I think just the escaping reality of it all, and then having this like super being, right, that you are now falling in love with, especially in a day and age where, like, at least for women, men continue to disappoint us.
Yeah. You know, I think part of the attraction might be that there's no judgment there. Like, you can't, like, judge whether some fantastical being is unrealistic because it is unrealistic, or the world setting is unrealistic. Things don't happen like that in the real world. Well, guess what? We're not in the real world. So I think it's easy to suspend judgment. And when you suspend judgment, I think, you know, again, it's mostly women who are reading these books. When you suspend judgment, I think it's relaxing to have judgment suspended in a romance.
You can let your mind just go to this like realm, right? What I will say about romanticity, which is really interesting, especially as a business that tries to push celebrating diversity in romance, is that more and more you hear things like, oh, I couldn't relate to the like Latinx characters in this book, but you can relate to a fae, right? And so like, two and two don't necessarily add up to four sometimes. And I think that I would encourage readers to like really analyze, like, why is it that you can't relate to people who are in a contemporary world different than who you are, but you can relate.
Oh, I see what you're saying. You're saying, okay, you can't relate necessarily to a Latinx character if you're not Latinx.
Correct.
But you can relate to a fairy, and we know you're not a fairy.
Right.
That's your point.
Right.
Is that what you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, that brings me to an email that I have here from someone in the anonymous family, but with a Latin name, who says, I'd argue romance novels appeal mostly to women because they are one of the few mediums fully appealing to a woman's desires, like fan service does to anime. And through simple and safe lots and love stories, topics like body autonomy, birth control, infertility, the difficulties of motherhood, female relationships, and even politics can be explored, discussed, and reconciled, I think she means. But she ends with, I love steamy lit. Please increase your Spanish book selection.
We try. Yeah, I mean, I would agree with everything that they said. What I will say, though, is that we've kind of gotten stuck in this mindset that romance books are primarily written by women for women. But I will challenge everyone to think that there are so many more identities that are writing romance and that are reading romance. And I think when we speak about just women in the genre, it really excludes folks who are part of different identities that are also loving and reading romance.
Yeah. I mean, again, like I said, demographically, from what my research showed, 78% of romance readers are female, 22% of romance readers are male. Maybe that's changing now. I mean, there is a lot of gay male romance fiction out there, more than I think people realize. Maybe you realize it, but I mean, more than, you know, general consumers realize. And so, you know, maybe that is changing. I have another email here from Ziggy, who says, Romanticy was addressed by Bill Mayer recently. And his take was, women read these books because they miss the tough he-men of yore, because all the 20 to 30-year-old men have been demasculated by the anti-male toxic masculinity talk and are now afraid to ask women out. Thus, this is a substitute for the men that no longer exist. What's your take on it? Ziggy wants to know.
Women, who I think is what we're trying to get at here, right? Or women are not in submissive roles anymore, and they are using their voice and they're using their power, and they are saying no, which before didn't carry a lot of weight. And now we are taking women's no's a little bit more seriously, right? So I don't think that men forgot how to ask women out. It's just they don't know how to take no for an answer. So.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, I guess we need to also talk about all the romance stories that involve like damsels in distress and men swooping in to rescue them, and you know, because there's a lot of that.
Yeah, and I think
fiction too.
I think a lot of that has also changed with the time. So I think, and you know, to the caller who called earlier, that's why I was like, I don't think the romance books you might pick up today might have aged well, right? Because I think you saw a lot of that, and now you're seeing more and more. Sure, she could be a damsel in distress, but she's saving herself, right? And her partner is just along the journey, is maybe supporting her, is providing the support any partner would, et cetera, et cetera. But she is saving herself. We're no longer seeing these he is my savior stories anymore.
Right. So those books with the covers of like bare-chested Fabian with his hair blowing in the wind, they're pretty dated now as far as, and even books like, I don't know, like I found Danielle Steele in the bottom of my mother's closet or something. I'm not sure that those have aged well either.
Probably not. And I've started recently doing like a deeper dive. I want to be a better romance ambassador, if that makes sense. And I want to see like where the genre all started, right? Because I came to romance at a much later age. Like I wasn't stealing my mom's, you know, Harlequin paperbacks when I was growing up. So I there's a lot of gap in my knowledge of the romance genre and its pioneers. And so I've been wanting to do more research. And that's where I started with my Susan Elizabeth Phillips journey. And, you know, I read some of her later work that came out probably in the past couple of years, and it was great. But then I read a book that I think came out in 1994, and I was like, my God. Like, there was some things that were very, I think, like, great for her time, and she was, like, a champion of queer relationships. She talks about, like, HIV and, like, being a good ally in that sense. But then there are some other, like, more racist things that come out throughout the book that you're like, this would not, you know, fly
today. This wouldn't fly today.
Right. So, yes, I would say that there's a lot of things that we've outgrown as a society, right? And we've learned and we do better now.
You know, the romance market, I think, is the place to look for the early signs of what the future may hold in society generally. Just like, you know, many years ago in the 70s and very early 80s, the pornography industry was first, you know, were the first early adopters of DVR technology, you know, where you could get a tape sent into the privacy of your own home mm-hmm. to watch porn as opposed to going into, you know, a peep show, for example. And the romance market, I think, is similarly situated now, particularly in connection with the use of AI, artificial intelligence. You know, thanks to the fact that there's voracious readers of romance and there's hefty profits to be made, more and more romance authors are adopting AI to write their books. Mm-hmm. A couple of weeks ago, the New York Times had a huge article in the business section with a pseudonymous romance author, didn't use her real name, who claimed that she could write 200 romance books a year using AI. She also claimed that she had a program that she was selling to teach authors, new authors, how to use AI to write romance novels. So the publishing industry seems to be in a significant shift now, especially in the romance genre, because there are, you know, there's huge consumption of these romance sure. books. And I just wonder, what do you think about all that? There's no, as far as I know, there's no law that says that an author has to disclose that their book was written or partially written or aided by AI. So we don't yeah. know when you read a book, you know, whether AI was involved or just the imagination of the author.
Yeah, and I don't know that there is either. I am seeing more and more in books where it says, like, AI intelligence cannot be trained by this material, which is a good thing to see, because AI is just grabbing things from things that already exist, right? So how much of your AI written book is actually stolen from authors' work that has been fed into these machines?
Good point.
And this happens with art too. We're having a lot of this conversation in, like, art cover for romance books. We do a lot of special editions, and in our contracts we put that no AI can be used in the creation of covers, because we want to pay artists. We don't want work that has been stolen from them by feeding it into a machine to now be recreated for something. And I think that we really all need to be more cognizant of that. I am really bad at recognizing AI, especially when it comes to covers. People have to, like, circle it for me, because I don't. Some things are very obvious, like there's a third hand in the picture all yeah. of a sudden, right? But there's some things that are scarily natural looking, I guess. And so I have not read a book that has been written by AI. And I think that this really creates a problem, especially in an industry that has already been primarily dominated by white people, right? And so, like, how much more of a disadvantage will now these AI written books for people who can afford this AI intelligence be pushed out versus those books written by authors part of marginalized communities and identities? What about all the black and brown authors who have been writing romance for years and years that are not using AI? So how you know, there's just, it's a really scary shift, and I really hope that readers are taking this into consideration when they're picking up the books they're reading. But like you said, right, I don't know
how you pick it
right,
up.
I would think that there's people are probably going to start putting more disclosures on books, kind of how I've seen the shift in now seeing very clear, this book cannot be used for AI training intelligence that we're seeing published in books. I would assume that probably more and more people are going to be including things like that, or that it's not AI created or written.
Yeah, because in the romance, which is so generally formulaic, I mean, across all the genres, across all the different, ethnic and social groups that write it, it's still formulaic. They're sure. still going to have a happy ending at sure. the end of it. And so it seems to be really susceptible mm-hmm. to the use of AI. One of the things I learned when I was researching for the show was that Claude, the chatbot, AI assistant Claude, mm-hmm. Is particularly adept at writing elegant prose, mm-hmm. but romance authors criticize it for being prudish, and mm-hmm. so it requires some specific nuanced prompting to generate effective sex scenes without resorting to repetitive, stiff language. Mm-hmm. I think writing sex scenes is probably the most difficult thing that any author that isn't AI assisted has to do,
yeah.
Right? I mean, you know, that's one of the criticisms, I think, of romance books. Certain romance books
sure.
is that, you know, hey, the sex scenes are just not there, you know?
Yeah. And I think a lot of it will also depend on the author and probably how comfortable they are with those aspects of their life and their writing and how comfortable they are at writing it, right? But yeah, I mean, I think when you are having something that is AI written, you're going to find a lot of stiffness in general, right? Because I think the beauty of a book written by human is that there's so much character, there's so much emotion, there's so much of yourself that you're putting on it that will never compare to something written by a robot.
Yeah, and there's, you know, there's a danger in that the fact that, you know, romance readers are so voracious, you know, they read so much, they're such, you know, extensive consumers, and because the books do kind of rely on a formula, there's a fear that, you know, with AI, that romance novels don't really have to be good because romance readers will read any old crap as long as it has a happily ever after. Do you think that's an accurate portrait of romance readers?
Not at all. I think that's very wrong. And I would say that while romance readers are voracious, there is so much romance out there that is not on BookTok, that is not marketed by your publisher, there's so much indie authors that are publishing every day, that are putting their work out there, that I don't think that there is a shortage of romance books for anyone to be turning to AI to put books out faster.
Okay, well, you know, that takes us right into this next text message I have from 7197, who says, you would love the Facebook group called The Smut Hood. It's a book recommendation group by mostly women, very revealing, 238,000 members, and all things romance and smut. So be sure to look up the acronym list in the group to understand the abbreviations. I don't know whether that's something you're familiar with, but as another way to get book recommendations
right.
to fit your taste,
mm-hmm.
Here's one Facebook group that has 238,000 members. It's not Book Talk. It's, you know, a totally different, avenue.
But also, where are people getting their recommendations from, right? And so, like, I think we can go back to a bigger problem of something you asked earlier was, like, why are some books taking off and not others? And so I think that we need to challenge ourselves to read more than what BookTok is recommending us or what's going viral, right? Like, I'm not saying don't explore it. Explore whatever it is that you want and like and want out of your romances. But I also challenge you to go a step further and maybe see who else is writing books in that subgenre?
Well, people, for one thing, people are seeing romance, more romance on TV that originates in books. So, mm-hmm. for example, with Bridgerton or Heated Rivalry, I mean, you may never have read a romance novel, but you really enjoyed Bridgerton, and all of a sudden you learn that there's a whole bunch of English Regency romance novels that are out there for you. Or Heated Rivalry. Heated Rivalry has brought a ton of people to gay romance that wouldn't have otherwise, I think, explored that genre. Particularly, like I said, mature women who demographically are the biggest consumers of gay male romance.
Right. Yeah, and I think there's also a fine line within that in the community, in that, like, how much is being fetishized, and what is in those consumption levels, right? But yeah, I mean, Heated Rivalry, I think it came out March 25th, 2019, or the first book in the series did, Game Changers, and you know, it's been some time. The books have been out for a really long time, but the show has created such popularity around it.
It's a cultural juggernaut. Yeah. It's a phenomenon.
Yeah, I mean, we have Cover to Cover next week here at Water Street. It's an outdoor book fair. It starts at 5 p.m. On Wednesday, March 25th. It's free. If folks want to attend, there will be authors, book booths, all of the things. But they're doing a Heated Rivalry party as well. And so, it's everywhere. We're having
everywhere.
90s club like dance nights that are Heated Rivalry. Rivalry theme, then all of these things that are happening. So I think it's beautiful to see in a time where queer rights are being taken away state by state, date by day. So I think there's a beauty in seeing that amplification, and there's much, much more where those books came from.
Right. Okay, well, that's another thing to be aware of, that event on Water Street, March 25th. It's free, right? That's a Wednesday.
Yes.
March 25th. So is it all day event?
Or? No, it's from 5 to 9 p.m., I believe.
Okay, from 5 to 9 p.m. And I don't want to forget to remind people about the event Romantically Ever After, the Library Lit Fest, right? Which is scheduled from, is it May 2nd?
For Largo, it is May 2nd.
May 2nd at the Largo Public Library. It's free. There'll be 18 plus romance book convention features, author signings, book sales, and meet and greet events at the library. It's free. Okay. And if there's any other events I need to mention, you know, feel free, because those are the only ones that I'm aware of. Okay. I do want to ask you to tell us, what are some of the most popular romance books out there right now that are very popular, and what are some books that you think should be more popular but aren't?
Yeah, I mean, I think for something that's popular, you can always look at a bestsellers list, and I'm not going to get into those because I'm cognizant of time, and because I want to amplify books that
there you go.
Should have your attention. So I will start with, if you like romantasy, A Vow in Vengeance by Jacqueline Rodriguez came out earlier this year. If you like Shadow Daddies, that's definitely your jam. I think if you love a very like emotional journey, Real by Kennedy Ryan is another phenomenal book. And
one more we have time for.
And one more. You know, when you tell me books, I'm like, what are books at this point? But something I mentioned earlier, The Oath by T.M. Richardson. I think if you want to explore something like polygamy, I think it's a beautiful book to get into.
All right. That's all we have time for, my friends. I want to thank Mel Saavedra, founder of the Steamy Lit Collective and Steamy Lit Books in South Tampa and elsewhere, for joining us today to talk about romance books and romance generally. If you are a romance reader, you know where to find some Steamy Lit. Thanks also to my show assistant, Daria Miranova, for helping to promote this show. And she'll be blogging about it on the website tomorrow. Thanks also to Jessica Green on the soundboard, who gets us on the air. there. Now, remember, we've got Bobby Fiesler coming to the Wavemakers Lecture Series on Wednesday, April 8th at the Commodore to talk about his book, American Scare, a fascinating piece of Florida history where the legislature went after and threatened gays, blacks, and progressives. Yes, I said history. That time was Florida in the 50s and 60s, and it sounds like today. Bobby's a great speaker, and tickets are only $10 at WMNF.org/events. I hope to see you there. Now, stay tuned for Duncan with Talking Animals. We are WMNF Tampa, and we are out of here.